Okay, so we have we do have districts in Wisconsin, I think, that are already doing a good job with implementing the science of reading. We have a number of others that are in the process of transitioning to that. So I asked Kyle Thays, who's the essentially reading coach at Luxembourg Casco School District, and the reason I picked him is they've been doing it much longer than most districts probably in Wisconsin, and I think they have more results to show for that. So thanks for coming in, Kyle, and thanks for sitting through all this.
You bet. Thank you guys for the great conversations today. I've learned a lot here about the progress we're making, and really hopeful to hear everybody at the table working together, which is great. My name is Kyle Thays. I've worked for the Luxembourg Casco School District here for 17 years now, and I started off in the classroom, turned into a literacy coach in the district, did some intervention work, and now actually I'm considered the district instructional coach for K-12, which is a big overtaking, but I kind of cover a lot of areas, do a lot of different things there. I came today to talk a little bit about some of the things that we've done over the last quite a few years here, and some of the results that we've gotten from that. And in education, like everybody else has talked about, it's messy. So we've learned from our mistakes along the way, but we've tried to ground ourselves in research. And I just I'm here today to tell a little bit about our story, and a lot of the things that I'm going to talk about today actually align to a lot of the conversations the experts at the table brought up today. So first of all, data is important, and I think this is kind of where it all started for us at Luxembourg Casco. Back in around the 2010 to 2014 range, we started having a lot of conversations about literacy in our district and some of the outcomes we were having on our state assessments. At that point, we averaged around 39% proficiency on our state assessments, and we weren't happy about that, and we knew we could do better for our students and for our community. And at that point, we got together and had to do some of our own digging, do our own research, and look at the National Reading Panel, what suggestions were out there. And we really went through, I would say, a first stage shift in our district that led to some pretty good outcomes, I would say, and big changes for us. Currently, from that 2005 school year after that up until now, we average 62% proficiency in our district, and this is third grade through sixth grade assessment at an intermediate school. Which is assessing, again, the state assessment. And we think that's a pretty good indication, and that shift is an indication of our literacy program below that as well. So just talking on what that kind of looked like for us, at that time, early on, our initial shifts, one of the things that was crucial for us was our screening process that we did put into place, and we heard that talked about here today. And we put in a screening process that did screen students three times a year on multiple screeners at not just our primary levels, but we now today do this all the way up to our eighth grade level. And at our younger levels, we're making sure we're covering all the main pillars of literacy in order to allow that screener then to give us information. And then I work with our teachers as the district coach to look at that data and determine what we need to do with some of those students who not only are at risk, but we also, in those meetings afterwards, discuss students that aren't proficient. So not just the students that are below the 20th percentile, but the students that are not proficient readers. And we assign our experts to those students with a plan. And the students that aren't proficient but aren't at risk, we talk to our classroom teachers about what we can do to improve their literacy and what those students need as well. So we think that has been a very big, caused some very great outcomes for us and for our students. The other thing that we did is we shifted, we had a phonics curriculum, but it wasn't great. And it was more sing-songy and didn't have a lot of research behind it. And we really dove into finding a good curriculum, and that, I think, was one of our very large, we saw great gains because of that. So we shifted over to a phonics curriculum. There's good ones out there, but the ones that we went to was called Foundations. And the reason we went in that direction of the Foundations curriculum is there was coaching support that went with it, and the coaching support was phenomenal. We had a great coach, and so much can be said about that. And they also allowed for, and you spoke of interventions, opportunities for Tier 2 and Tier 3 interventions. So kids who didn't learn their phonics had opportunities to get taught it again. And then even at the higher levels, from grades third grade and above, we have there's interventions in place that those students can get taught it even again. So it gets and it's all in a system, which was really great for us. So that was a great something that really helped move the needle for us. The next thing that we did is we examined our reading curriculum, which was all over the board. Every grade level was doing different things, and we really needed to hone it in, which today's world we call that guaranteed viable curriculum. We needed to create that system. And so we sat down and we piloted a number of curriculums, and we went with what today is now considered a pretty controversial curriculum, the units of study. And at the time, the good things it did for us was bring everybody together, and it unified us, and we could see what the next grade level was going to, what we had to get kids to. We knew what was coming from behind us, and we created PLCs that were very strong in our district. And we felt like that also, you know, created a coaching model for me to go in and have common conversations with teachers, create professional development, and it really boosted up our conversations we were having professionally. So those were all great things, and all of that included, you know, coaching and development. It first started outside the district, but then eventually the district saw such value in it that they created my position, and I moved into that position, and now I'm doing it across grade levels. It started 4K-5, and now it's all the way up to 12th grade. So that was kind of shift number one, and we felt pretty good. We were flying high, and our scores were good, and community was happy, and the kids were reading. But I attended a conference, another reading conference, and I came across another professional at the D.C. Evers School District. She was their director of curriculum literacy assessment and EL down there, and we had a lot of really great conversations about all this stuff. And she came up to visit our district with some, with like we all we do in our field, we collaborate. And they brought professionals up there, and they wanted to see our phonics program. Little did I know, they were going to leave with also me having a deeper understanding of what the science of reading was. And that was really, that's when it started for me, to understand the components of it. And some of the things that we had, that were happening in our curriculum right under my nose that I wasn't recognizing were not great practices. So, you know, that led to us leaders sitting around the table and saying, we need to do something different at our primary levels. We're seeing good outcomes, but our kids still are getting conflicting curriculum when they're learning how to learn to read words with phonics. But then in a reading curriculum where they're reading texts, are being taught to read words using other methods that are not backed by research. So that overtaking, you know, it led to some problems for us that we had to solve. So as a district, the two I'd say main ones were that, and we also didn't have a phonemic awareness curriculum. And so the first easy one was we needed to get a phonemic awareness curriculum. So we found one, collaborating again with DC Everest and looking out there at the National Reading Panel suggestions. We found what we felt was a strong one, and we implemented that, and that was an easy fix. Within a year, we had that out there enrolling, and we saw the benefits of that working along with our phonics curriculum. The larger overtaking was the curriculum. We did feel like the curriculum had a lot of really great things for us, but we did want to change some things at the lower level. So we took a leap of faith, and we did purchase the new units of study in hopes that there was going to have some of these things in there, because the revamped units of study, with a promise, was going to make some of these big changes, and we piloted that at first. And happy to say, after receiving it, and we're in the middle of this transition right now in our district, that there are a lot of very large changes in that new reading curriculum. Altering, the lessons are altered, and the bad word-solving practices, such as, it was referenced a little bit before, but I'll give you an example of, you know, a kindergartner expecting to read the word caterpillar, which is a multisyllabic word, in a text. The only way they can do that is by looking at the picture. They're not going to be able to use phonics to sound that word out. In our curriculum, we were teaching kids, when we get to those words, look at the picture, don't worry, don't attend to the sound, and you just kind of figure it out. And what was part of the curriculum, right? We also had books that relied on patterns in there, where kids were memorizing more of the pattern at those lower levels of the text and not really actually reading the words. And so there were some issues that we had inside the text, and which you've heard the science of reading experts talk about. And so we were hopeful that those switches were going to be made, and they have been made in there, and we're very happy about that. Now we have the overtaking of kind of reprofessionally developing our teachers again in this new way of thinking, which it's come up here before. Not everybody is on board right away, and that's a challenge, you know, from a teacher's perspective, because change is hard. But we're going through right now and, you know, working through that new curriculum to make those changes. The other thing I think that hasn't been talked about today, and I haven't heard anybody mention, but something that I really would like to see added to the conversation, is the use of decodable texts in our lower level schools. So a decodable text is basically following the phonics concepts a student is taught in phonics. It's a book that then the students are able to read that has those same phonics concepts in it, and that connected text and that fluency is all part of the reading pillars. And if we don't have those texts in the hands of our children, we're kind of falling back on the chance that we might be putting some of the wrong texts with words that they cannot solve with some of the skills that we have in there, and knowing that we're no longer going to teach those skills anymore. So those kids are not, they're going to come across a word in there that they don't have the phonics skills to read anymore and not be able to read the word. And in our case right now, with what we're currently dealing with, we're telling our teachers, just tell them the word, because we don't want them. They don't have those skills to do that at that time. They'll get them eventually. But I think decodable text is something that should be earmarked in this conversation if we are going to be chasing good curriculums and chasing good practices. There should be a conversation about the resources that are in the hands of those kids and those teachers to be able to do what they need to do. And the other part of the process here that we're in the middle of right now and is rather messy, and I referred to this before, is removing some of the texts that students would have in their hands that have to be read using bad practices, and those exist. They're in our classrooms right now. But the problem is we can't just take them all out because we don't have other texts to replace them. Part of our curriculum is kids need books to read. So right now, and it's an initiative of ours as we go forward in the summer here, is to revamp our book room, look at our libraries, and look through some of those texts to determine what needs to come out in this process, because not everything needs to come out, but there are certain texts that we need to take out. So that's part of the big picture problems. The other thing, I think it was referenced, the Fontes and Pinnell curriculum was referenced here before, but another thing, with the screeners being brought to the table here, we also are facing a problem with our screening system, and that currently right now in our district, one of our early literacy screeners, one of the three that we use at our primary level, is Fontes and Pinnell's benchmark system. And in order to progress through that benchmark system, students need to read texts that are developed with the wrong practices that students would need, and we're no longer going to teach that. So now if we're judging whether or not students are at risk or not with the screener, it's not going to work. So we are going to have to, we're going to have to spend some time digging into that screener as well, because it's not aligning to the practices we're going to be using in the classroom and best practice. And I'm not saying by any means sitting down with a student, which is what that assessment system does, and listening to them read is bad. I just don't, at this point at our district, we're having conversations that we don't feel, and there's starting to be some research gathered on this, that it's a good universal screening system. It may be something to be used in the classroom. Sit down with a student, you need to listen to them read, but not to judge a student as far as whether or not they're at risk or not, especially with some of the texts that are in there. So we're going to take that on after we figure out what early literacy screener is going to replace our PAL screener, which is no longer going to be relevant either. So we have a lot of work to do at Luxembourg, and we keep kind of moving along, but that's kind of our story. And I think, one of the things you guys have been asking as I guess I'll call this a team here having the conversation is what is needed. And from my perspective, I am not an expert by any means, but being in the school district and continuing to read the papers about school districts battling through this, I think one thing that is essential is that we have to find a way to gather data from school districts on what curriculums they're using on to cover the most important pillars of literacy. And so, I'm reading more and more in the newspaper about districts that don't have phonics curriculums. Or I know of districts, because of the coaching that we receive through foundations, that only have a foundations curriculum but don't have a reading curriculum. And I think that's a really big problem. So we need to make sure that we are covering, if you don't have a phonics curriculum, you're not teaching kids how to read. You're just putting books in front of them, right? So we need to have to find a way to gather that information. And I think we can put a process together, which gets to my second point here, where if we can gather that information and know that districts don't have those, a phonics curriculum, for example, well, then what process and what people can we put in front of them to get the right resources in front of them, and then a process that involves coaching that then leads to a curriculum change and best practice in those classrooms, which is going to lead to better outcomes for kids. So, I think those two things kind of go hand in hand, and it also gives you a soft checks and balance system to understand where districts are at, more on a local level, to work with one another, so I think that's important. And I think the third point I want to make is what's needed here is I think coaching is essential. And that was heard over and over again this morning and afternoon here at the podium. And, Mississippi has used, a playbook on this. I think also, from my own experience in the district, none of this work is going to be done correctly unless you have people in classrooms to support the teachers. When teachers learn, when teachers grow, when they feel comfortable, kids learn. And principals and directors right now have so much on their plates. School districts, schools don't look the same anymore than they did even 10 years ago. And their ability to go in and, you know, they might be going in and giving feedback to teachers, but not on an everyday basis like a coach is. They're not doing professional development and planning PDs, which actually our district has a day tomorrow, professional development day tomorrow, where me as a coach would be involved in the full day in the gamut of meeting with teachers and developing them. So that's the most important work that can be done. So finding a pathway to find coaches, support coaches, not just at the upper levels. I know DPI talked about that, but trickle down into the local level school district coaches, and how do we gain that expertise if we don't have one of those coaches? Because we're doing okay as a district. We've made some of these gains, but I still think that, you know, we deserve just like anybody else does support in the coaching system as well. So and the last point I made in here, and I mentioned this before, is the support of decodable text. So those are the main needs I'd say that I would say within the district that we need. And this is not by any means an easy job. Teaching reading is complex, and our teachers have so many things on their plate. And I think from a professional development perspective, it's also important to think about all these pillars of literacy being taught. When we focus on reading for 2 to 3 years, they're still teaching math and science and social studies and social emotional curriculum and all these other things. And that means those things are being put to the side so that we can focus on reading. And it's no wonder, honestly, that our teachers' mental health is struggling right now, because those are a lot of things to take on and be responsible for 20 to 30 children in your classroom and try to really do it well. So there's a lot on the table here. Literacy is very, very important, but I think how you approach this and how we handle this is very important as well. And, you know, the time is now. We have all the right people at the table, and I think, you know, let's not waste the opportunity. That's what I have, and that's kind of our story at Luxembourg-Casco. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Thanks a lot, Kyle. And so I know bringing in new teachers, and I think you and I have talked about that a little bit, you've had to sort of retrain some of them. And also, similarly to that, how have you dealt with the teachers that have been there a long time and are pretty sure that they know what they're doing, and to try to retrain them? And I know you have some very strong leadership at your school, which obviously helps, but can you address that a little bit and what you're seeing with the college prep piece of it?
Sure. So I'll address the first part. The college preparation part, as a district, we have shifted our new teacher onboarding, and it's very costly. We bring them in for a whole extra week of outside of the regular summer in-service. They come in themselves for a whole extra week ahead of time, and they meet with leadership and coach and the coaches in the district. I'm the only district coach, but we do have other teachers that play a coaching role because we don't have the money for the positions, but it's a need. So on the math side of things, we have teachers that help out and jump in that are master teachers. But we have to spend money, you know, preparing these teachers and going through this, whether it's from a curriculum perspective, best practice perspective, you know, so that's, I think, a big part of it. And throughout the school year, a lot of the coaching that we do early on are with some of those new teachers. As well, so that takes up a lot of that as well in the training that goes along with it. But I think the other thing that I think has been important here is we've done the best we can at Luxembourg to try to collaborate with area universities, and up by us, this is UWGB and St. Norbert are two of them, and work within their education program. And also, I spend a lot of time talking to the professors in those areas and some of the teachers teaching in those areas. So I'm confident that this stuff is all, it's on their radar. You know, they're having conversations about it. I don't know how fast things are going to move, but that is something that I've had to do, and I've been lucky enough to have my district allow me to do, to go right into the universities. I go in as a speaker into those classrooms and talk about some of this stuff, because I want those I want those pre-service teachers to know what's on the table, and also have conversations with some of those professors, and even have them come in and see in our classroom what we're doing, because we do place a lot of students that come in and see it firsthand, just so that they get that opportunity to hopefully get that mind shift happening. And I think it's got to be in collaboration, because I think teacher, you know, preparation is moving to more experiential preparation, which I think is great. We're getting them in the classroom. It needs to be like that. It's the theory is important, but they need to be out there seeing it. And so I think, you know, that's something that we're going to have to continue to work on. But, you know, as a district, not every district does that. So I'm fortunate that leadership allows me to do that. Now, on the other hand, teachers who have been there, you know, for a long time, I'm not discrediting any of their expertise by any means, but we often have conversations as if you know better, we're going to try to do better. And it can't happen overnight. I mean, these curriculum shifts, these mind shifts, they happen over multiple conversations, multiple meetings, conversations just pop-ins after school where, you know, you pick each other's brains and you have deeper conversations about it. But I think a lot of that movement is gained based on the trust and the fact that I'm a district coach. So they know that I'm there for them all the time. We have other coaches that do a great job in the district, but they leave. We have districts, you know, CESA comes in and offers us coaches, and they do a wonderful job, but they're there for a day or two, and then they're gone for a month, and then they come back. There's no real relationship gain. So I think having the in-house coaching really helps, I think, move the needle for all of our adult learners, and doing it from a team perspective, I think, is important, too.
So, okay. Thanks. Yep. Senator Jagler.
Thank you. As I talk to my local administrators, I'm fascinated at the curriculum choices that have been made and continue to be made, and I'm quite honestly surprised you doubled down on one of the bad actors. Not my words; I'm not an expert, but identified Lucy Calkins and the units of study as one of the bad actors in this whole fight on the science of reading. Why did you go there? Why did you go back went back to her version 2.0, which her critics would say were only done because the spotlight was being shined on her by others?
I knew this question was coming today, so I kind of prepared myself. I thought that was going to be asked. So, there's a couple of reasons I think as a district we made that decision. And I'll be honest, I was for it. And a lot of it is because the professional development that I feel like we were able to lead through the district outside of the curriculum problems, what the curriculum brought to the table as far as the growth of our teachers, the tightness and the collegial conversations about learning that happened on a daily basis in our classrooms, it was brought upon by the models of that curriculum. And above that second grade level, we don't have – there's no real issues, you know, with the curriculum. It's robust. It has great topics. Kids are exposed to a lot of different vocabulary within it, and even at the lower levels, it is too. We did identify those problems that were in there, and we didn't take the full leap of faith right away. We purchased first the manuals, and I tasked myself with reading through every kindergarten manual, every first grade manual. So to me, those were the two most important manuals. Every unit in that manual to identify in there. Do I find any of this at all? And there was one little spot that I was concerned, and I thought we were going to have an issue. But what ended up happening was that part of the unit was actually more of an emergent reader, early literacy, before students are even learning sounds portion of the curriculum, where students were learning. The pattern part of the book was more of the memorization, the storytelling part, where kids learn how stories go. This is like 4K early kindergarten curriculum stuff. And past that, there was the use of decodable text. There was not any of the use use the picture to solve the word. There was actually I would say almost triple the amount of lessons on phonics and phonemic awareness within the actual reading curriculum. I mean, this is outside of the phonics curriculum that we already use. So once we saw that all in there, the price tag on a whole new curriculum, the professional development that goes along with it, and the time that it would take. We thought we would be able to move faster as long as the right tools were in there, and we felt the tools were there. So,
Representative Shelton, did you have anything?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You might have said this, and I'm sorry if I missed it. Do you have a sense of how much it cost your district to make those changes from the time you started it to where you are now?
That would have been a great thing for me to bring today, but I do not.
I'm just curious because, again, I think your story is so compelling, right, what you were able to do at your district. But I'm thinking about how we scale this up, right? Yeah. And, again, as I think about, I'm in the Green Bay School District. I was on the Green Bay School Board. I have two kids in the Green Bay District. And I've talked to a lot of the teachers, and they have shared, you know, the concern about wanting to meet the needs of their kids, but the cost of moving the curriculum. So you know, I appreciate you bringing that up, and that's something I think we should look at more is, you know, what will this cost bigger districts? I'm glad you were able to absorb it, but some people may not be able to.
Yeah, and you bring up a great point. I think the starting point to me, though, is determining whether what the schools within a larger school district like Green Bay have for curriculum. I mean, that's your starting point, because some of those districts, I mean, I don't know, but maybe they have a phonics curriculum in there. And maybe it's just a reading curriculum that needs to, or maybe they have a reading curriculum that is backed by science and research in there. And all we need to do is we need to get a phonics curriculum. Our phonemic awareness curriculum, I can't put a price tag on it, but I can tell you that it was very cost effective, and did not take. There was not a lot of professional development that went along with it. So that was a small amount of money for a large win for us. So,
yeah, Representative Hong.
Thank you, Chair Kitchens, and thank you so much. Really appreciate you taking the time to be here today. I know it must be a very busy time for you, and appreciate all of the teachers and the districts that you're supporting. You mentioned earlier, and I really appreciated this in your testimony, because I think it confirms what was said earlier, that our schools are our ecosystems, and that the nature and the environment of our classrooms right now, that there are so many different variables and factors playing into the mental health of our teachers, our students, and how that impacts how they learn to read. I'm going to go into, you noted that you do still need support in that coaching system that you have now. Can you go into specifics about what that support looks like? Are you talking about financial support? Are you able to take some of the data that you've gotten over the past couple of years of implementing the system, and how you're able to translate that data into what funds?
Yeah, so I would say as far as support goes, on the funding side of things, I don't have that background information as far as, you know, costs go from a coaching perspective. I would say what kind of support, you know, our district would need, or what we would be looking for from a standpoint of, you know, me as our literacy coach at first, 4K, 5, that was a large overtaking at the way it is, and now transitioning and working 4K-12, I spend a lot of time. Recently, I've spent a lot of time actually in our high school English classrooms and having conversations with our middle school English ELA teachers, and it's that has been a big shift for me professionally, coming out of a lower level environment, but being stretched across that entire span has stretched me, and I feel like our district would benefit having somebody, once that transition happens where we're learning to read and reading to learn, having experts in those two areas because of the importance, especially at the lower level of this. I think, you know, I feel like I can do my job efficiently, but I do feel like it's taken me a long time to have all the tools in my belt. To expect somebody to come in into a school district as a coach in a first or second year and to be able to do that, I think would be tall task. And we also have, you know, we're talking the literacy side of things. Our math data is very good in our district, but we do have, you know, there's a need there for help with our instruction in math too. That's a whole nother network. So, exactly. Yeah.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you. Actually, Representative Sheldon asked one of the questions that I wanted to know, which was the cost, how much it cost, but how many schools did you have to implement this for, and or how many kids?
So the Luxembourg-Casco School District is a one campus school. It doesn't have multiple schools. We have a 4K 2 school at our primary school, and I can't right now off the top of my head give you exact numbers, but I can tell you that on average a kindergarten classroom is anywhere from 110 to 120 students. We have currently seven kindergarten teachers, 6 first grade teachers, and 6 second grade teachers. So that's our primary building, and then our intermediate school building is 3-6, and we also same setup there where there's 6 classroom teachers per grade level with approximately, you know, I'd say 120 to 125 students per grade level. And then that tends to increase as we get towards middle school from a numbers perspective, because we take an influx of students from some of our school districts, private schools that are inside that only go up to a certain grade level. So,
and forgive me if you said this already. I tried to take notes, but sometimes I get confused. Did you say that you were an instructor or like director of instruction or?
Nope, I am not. I taught fourth grade, and then I was a literacy coach, and I did some intervention work, oddly on the math side of things, because that's what you do in districts. You figure out ways to find jobs work, to make jobs work. And then that transitioned after they saw the growth into the full-time role. So I'm our district's full-time instructional coach. Okay, it's not just literacy, but I spent, I think it was 6 years directly involved in our literacy portion, and I spent a lot of my coaching capital down there too.
So after you became the instructional coach, did you get replaced as a literacy coach?
No.
Or you just do it all?
I do it all.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
A lot for you.
That's okay. Do the best we can.
I'm not sure what this is about. But anyway, I don't see any other questions. So thanks so much for coming down.
Yep.
Really appreciate it.